Mini episode 1853 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the 2025 NFC East preview on the FDH Lounge. This is the first in our series of NFL divisional previews for the year. Rick Morris and Chris Galloway, two of your original FDH Lounge dignitaries, bringing this to you as per usual. And as is generally the case, on the first one, we will hit a couple of macro level themes for the off season for the things that have happened between then and now. And then the rest of them will be pretty straightforward, just getting into the business of each division. We generally start with the AFC, but we're shaking it up a little bit this year. Chris, it is very fitting because 2025 in society writ large has been a year for just kind of blowing up the plans and, you know, going with something goofy here and there. So we're going to do that on this show. We're starting with the National Football Conference.
Let's do something different. Like you said, for how long have we done this? 20 years? I've lost track.
Yeah.
We always start with the AFC.
Sure.
And I know when I suggested to you a couple of days ago, I was like, NFC? Like, let's go that way. Let's go non-alphabetical order. How's that?
Okay. Yeah. So we'll do that. We will stick with taking some of the macro stuff at the outset. And one of the things that I was going to get into is that I think we said a lot the same last year, that there wasn't a whole lot of things macro level that seemed to be that much different from year to year. What was striking is you look at the transactions in the offseason, and there's a lot of names that are changing places in the offseason, a lot of name players. And it's not quite to the level of what I used to say about Peyton Manning, that he won his first Super Bowl as Peyton Manning and a second one as Trent Dilfer. But you know the way it goes. There's a lot of guys who still carry the same name. Maybe they shouldn't be allowed to carry the same name because they're not exactly the same guy. But of a lot of the players who change teams here, whether it be Joe Flacco, Aaron Rodgers, Russell Wilson at the quarterback position. I'm not going to put Nick Chubb in there at running back because I think that is yet to be proven yet. But Najee Harris, Stephon Diggs, certainly DeAndre Hopkins, a lot of guys at different positions here. You even get down to the guys like Von Miller and Hassan Reddick. You're not hardly seeing anybody that's at the peak, the tippy top of their game, for the most part, in the offseason to change teams. And that would be something that would be truly noteworthy were that the case if you had a bunch of those guys.
No, we didn't see that. That's 2 years in a row where the amount of movement has been very minimal.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say that I don't think any of the movement is anything that's going to move the needle in terms of who we expect to be in the playoffs. There's no, you know, Aaron Rodgers, you know, and again, I know he's in the AFC, but he's a big name example to what you mentioned. You know, Aaron Rodgers is, he's not moving the needle for Pittsburgh. He's older. His arm is not as strong as it used to be. He's slower. He's going to have a probably at best middle of the pack offensive line in front of him. So he's not going to change much. I mean, I think some of the changes that we may see if we look at things like the NFC are, you know, Sam Darnold had a great year last year for Minnesota. Yep. And, you know, they decided that, listen, it doesn't matter that Sam had a great year and that we went 14-3. We've got to go with JJ McCarthy. So Sam gets shipped off, despite a 14-3 record, and in comes JJ McCarthy, who is, you know, unproven, missed his rookie season. There were a lot of questions about him.
I thought he was overdrafted. I thought he was way overdrafted.
Yeah, I thought so too. We talked about it that year when he was coming out in that draft show. I know our our friend Jason Jones, I believe, agreed. Mm-hmm. I mean, when all you ever hear is like, well, he's a winner from a winner program, it's like,
right.
Okay.
Tebow.
Yeah. I mean, so I think that's the kind of, you know, there's an addition, if you will, that I don't know that we can, would anyone think the Vikings are going to go 14-3 again?
No.
I don't think so. He's in essence a rookie.
Yeah.
And so rookie quarterbacks typically don't do that well.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, to your point, there was not the monumental trade that feels like, hey, we're shifting the balance. There's no Stafford to L.A.
Right.
You know, there's nothing like that for us to hang our hat on and say, boy, that's going to change some things in the AFC or the NFC.
That's true. And another point that I want to make is something that I had heard recently here. This is a point where I want to contrast a lot of the kind of knuckle-dragging clickbait aspect of what you're going to get with coverage as opposed to what we're doing. And it actually emanates from our hometown of Cleveland, Ohio. I won't say what show in particular, but it shows up on my YouTube algorithm because here's the big hint. I do like to hear McNuggets talking about the Cavs in the winter. But one of the guys on there, one of these ex-NFL players on there, says something about the Browns, like, it's just the beginning of training camp. Like, I don't care what anybody says. I haven't lost hope for this season yet. And I'm just like, that is the worst level of analysis I could ever even imagine. Because what it tells me is, you know, you're seeing the same things I'm seeing there. But I haven't lost hope yet. There's like 10 days in the offseason that every team has at most. The days of the NFL draft, any days that you make trades. There's like 10 days between the end of the Super Bowl and the beginning of training camp that affect the next year. It's baked in the cake, Chris. If you're looking at a team and you're not impressed with what you're seeing and you say, I haven't given up hope yet, you're pandering to the fan base. I'm not just aiming this at the Browns as much as it might seem that way, but basically everything we're about to talk about, it's what happened in no more than 10 days and in some cases less than 10 days between the end of the Super Bowl and the beginning of this season. That's it, Chris. It's already basically done for at this point. You can get worse if guys get injured. But the notion of getting tremendously better if you didn't get the work done in the off season ain't going to happen.
100% correct. I mean, there are some examples where without moving a player or players, you can improve your situation, right? And that usually revolves around coaching, a coaching change, right? But to your mm-hmm. point, that's off-season stuff where you've seized the window.
Yep.
You have teams that I think are going in the opposite direction, like the Cowboys, by not getting Micah Parsons resolved, by not getting a running back that's going to be able to get things done for them. You have the Bengals not re-signing Hendrickson and now admitting that they might have to trade him away. I mean, that's a really bad defense. Okay. They were last year.
Yeah.
And you take Hendrickson off that line without that pass rush. I mean, Joe Burrow's going to have to score 40 a game.
Yeah.
So that means that when they run into an average or above defense, they're toast.
Yep.
So, I mean, those are examples of teams, you know, not getting it done in the off season. If anybody thinks George Pickens is moving a needle for the Cowboys, they're nope. out of their mind.
They're using a needle if they think that.
Boy. What are you doing, Gerald? and then, So I think your point is spot on. I do think there are some places where, even without change, and again, I know we're focused on the NFC, but I'll use because you mentioned the Browns,
mm-hmm.
And maybe this is all, you know, hopey changey, but I would argue that, you know, a team like the Browns reverting back to their 2023 Stefanski system, back to what their players were, you know, in essence drafted for and initially coached for a number of years and are comfortable in versus what they tried last year, which was to blow it all up, implement a whole new system for one guy who mm-hmm. was terrible. That could be the kind of tweak, right? That that's just a basic thing of going back to a system that they're comfortable with that results in some wins, just because they're not in a spot where you have 11 members on one side of the ball that, you know, that aren't comfortable in the offense. Cause the only person last year that seemed to be was Jerry Jeudy.
Yeah. Yeah. He had a career year essentially. And that's
terrible
a point well
quarterback
taken.
Play.
With he did.
Quarterback
yeah.
play.
Yeah. So, yeah. So, I mean,
I think there is an example of ways a team can help themselves, not through the draft and the free agency, by saying last year was an abomination. Let's go back to what we do well. And let's see if we can squeeze out a few more wins because of that.
And we'll see how that affects some of the teams that we're going to be evaluating along the way here. So the format that we have used the last couple of years, we stumbled on this for our previews, but I think it's been the most efficient format that we've been able to use, is excerpting from Fantasy Football Draftology 2025, available on the main page of fantasydrafthelp.com. One run-on sentence for each NFC team. Since we're doing the NFC today and the NFC East, it will be one run-on sentence for the four teams in this division. I will read these, and we will react to these subsequently here. Philadelphia, and this is, by the way, to predict the order of finish. Philadelphia, Howie Roseman caused some heart palpitations with necessary offseason tweaks, but the defending champs were basically intact positionally by the time it was all over. The postscript I'll add to that is that's because Landon Dickerson's okay. If he wasn't okay, that would have been a big problem there, because he ranked number 23rd on our list of top NFL players for this year. Washington, if the team can hold up defensively, then they are poised for another strong playoff run. Not a run-on sentence, but that was all I really needed to say. Dallas, in a league where teams have done a marginally better job of filling their holes on average each of the last several seasons, staying in a Stars and Scrubs franchise means that you're moving backwards, which is quite fitting for the NFC's new standard of futility, with a Championship Sunday appearance drought now 14 years longer than anyone in the conference. New York Giants, if the scrap heap approach at QB actually pays off, then Big Blue could really surprise, but that's a ginormous if. And by the way, to qualify that, when I say scrap heap approach, I'm talking about who they're probably going to trot out at the beginning of the season here. I'm guessing it's Russell Wilson. You've got Wilson. You got Winston in there. Jackson Dart, we'll see him later on, if at all, probably. But there's my rundown for the NFC East. And generally speaking, I can kind of tell coming in if it's something you may or may not largely agree with. And I'm guessing you probably largely agree with how I slotted stuff out here.
How I see the NFC East, you know, historically, no one ever repeats.
Yeah.
And because of that, I wanted to do something bold in my prediction here. I'm going to do it. I'm going to pick the Giants to win the NFC East. I'm going with a sophomore slide backwards for the Commanders.
Okay.
I'm going to have a riding on that excellent Giants defense. I'm going to have the Giants winning the NFC East, with the Eagles coming in second, Commanders in third. And again, these are all going to be bunched very tight, right?
Okay. You know,
other sure. than the Cowboys, I have yeah. the Cowboys at 6-11.
Okay.
Picking up the rear in a stinky season of awful results.
Okay.
So I have the Cowboys far in the rear, but I've got the Giants at 10 wins, winning the tiebreak over the Eagles at 10 wins and the Redskins at 9 wins. So I have it very, very, very bunched up. But
wow,
I'm a believer in the Giants from the standpoint of I think that team is a lot better than they get credit for. Okay, so sorry, I had to tell Alexa to shut up there for a moment. She was wondering. It's 6:30 when we're filming this, and she decided to chime in to tell me what the weather is going to be for tomorrow.
Oh, okay.
so No, I there's always the worst to first team, right, in a division.
Yeah.
That occurs, right? And I'm going to go with the Giants to be that worst to first team. A little bold, right? But I think their roster is way better than they get credit for because the quarterback play was so bad last year. Russell Wilson isn't great, but he'll steady the ship. He'll do what Dabo wants. And Jackson Dart looks like, second half of the season, he might be able to do some stuff if given the opportunity. So bold prediction, my first bold prediction out of the gate, Rick.
Wow. Well, Brian Daboll, having been saddled with the execrable Danny Dimes, we've never really seen him with any other quarterback. So it just struck me that, like, if he gets fired after this year, as everyone seems to think, he's going to be the classic example of a guy who was successful elsewhere because he does not deserve to get fired here. I looked at it, and I know that you know that a big part of my evaluations on these things has to do with roster construction and specifically filling holes. So I'll mention on the same page 18 in the draft guide here, remaining NFC team needs. The only needs I have remaining, Chris, for the Giants are on the offensive line. I really think at all three levels on the offensive line, they could use reinforcements. That could be troublesome. But you talked about the defense. I've had the defense with multiple needs for many years now, not the case anymore. So you and I are on the same page about that with the Giants.
Their offensive line, I mean, look, who doesn't have offensive line depth issues, right? I mean, everybody.
I'd argue starters as well, but, still.
Well, they have a left tackle, and, that can matter, especially for an older quarterback. So, it's not the best offensive line, but there is some talent there. So, this could all get torpedoed if Russ Wilson goes out there and is just god-awful, right? And again, a little risk in the prediction because I'm basically predicting he's not going to be god-awful,
right?
Which is, and again, if he proves to be, they're going to go to the rookie who, again, it's preseason, I know. But yeah, he's looked pretty good so far.
Right.
So I was kind of looking at the NFC and I'm going, who's our worst to first, right? And I'm like, I think the Giants, because of that defense and because Dable's coaching for his job, and I expect Super Bowl hangover with the Eagles. They didn't get to the Super Bowl, but, I still want to always call them the Redskins, the Commanders, none of us had them out of the gate getting that good that fast, right? They lost a lot. If you remember our preview going into last year, I mean, the Commanders had lost a lot of talent on paper, and it certainly didn't look like a roster that was going to surge, to the NFC championship game.
No, but I, like Houston the year before, I had them higher than a lot of people did. I had them in the 7 or 8 win range. So it's like, again, in neither instance, Chris, did I call it. In neither instance did I say they'll be a playoff team. But I looked at the work being done on the roster in the offseason, and I thought it was really good. I thought they'd souped up in a lot of areas. I will say this, that going back a number of years, done the previous divisional previews here on the show with Kyle Ross, professional handicapper. He's a believer, as are a lot of the wise guys, in a way that I am not, as far as this plexiglass principle. I think it can be a little bit kind of cliche to assign at the teams, but it's like you see somebody like Terry McLaurin that seems determined to prove me wrong. Like, oh yeah, Rick? Oh yeah? Oh yeah? Well, we're going to hit the plexiglass and come back to earth because I'm going to hold out for a bigger contract here. So it's like, it seems like there are people that are determined to make this a thing, and Terry McLaurin is one of them at the moment, him and his agent.
Yeah. And I will say this. I got to think every expert has the Giants in last place in that division, right?
Sure.
So,
except maybe the Cowboys. Some might have the Cowboys last.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. I've got the Cowboys dead last in that division.
Again, I think the Giants have a really good defense, and I am admittedly banking on a little bit of a hangover for the Eagles and the Commanders based on what they did last year.
Well, I know that you are a long-suffering Cowboy fan, so I will report this to you. So our fellow Bobcat, Dan McDowell, long of the ticket in Dallas, now a co-host of the Great Dumb Zone podcast out of the Dallas area, they talk a lot about Shoddy on the show here. So I will tell you this, Chris, as you're watching Cowboys press conferences this year and you're combing through everything for Shoddy, take a shot every time the man uses the word intentionality, because that's part of his lexicon very prominently, Chris.
Intentionality. Okay, I'm going to keep an eye out. I want to keep an eye out for that.
You think that'll help any? The fact that he uses that a lot, and they play a lot of, they have a lot of ping pong things for bonding in the clubhouse and all that kind of stuff. You think?
Yeah, that'll help? I don't think so. I don't think that's gonna matter at all.
Me neither. I think the Dumb Zone guys agree with us. So yeah.
I mean, we're talking about a guy who was not up for any coordinator jobs, let alone head coaching jobs.
Yes.
And I just think that it just blows up in their face. You know, is Micah Parsons ever even going to, you know, when's he going to show up at all? Right.
Right.
They are staring at a disaster. If you ask me.
I think they are. And we can't wrap this up before circling back around to, again, the big headline of this segment between the both of us is that you are not picking the Eagles to win the division. Spoiler alert, I am not picking the Eagles to repeat as NFC champions, but I am picking them to win the division, as are most folks here. So, again, the roster construction, again, they put it all back together in the offseason. They had to let some guys go, but it was the typical thing in the NFL draft of where I know that we sitting here on the North Coast of America, we whine about it justifiably that all the stupid GMs in the league always let players slide to the Ravens. But I dare say there's a lot of NFC fans that say the same thing about, and Howie Roseman, actually, you know, he is a great GM. He's proven that. I think he's learned from his earlier mistakes, but he has the same run of luck. If there's anybody that was like a 29-time All-American at Alabama or Georgia, you bet your ass they're going to slide to the Eagles. So he had the kind of offseason, I think you would admit, to basically put them right back in the mix there. Now, they did have the kind of year where just about everything went their way, and I know that you're probably looking at some of those breaks going against them, but I'm guessing that it's more so the breaks going against them than any discernible slide in terms of what they're putting out there from week to week.
Exactly. I mean, it's law of averages stuff. You know, they're going to play a harder schedule. You know, there's the classic hangover and, you know, effect. Everybody's gunning for the Super Bowl champs. You know, that's exactly what it is. They won some tight games. And I'm just kind of thinking, again, I have them in the playoffs. It's not like I've got them, you know, going from first to last. I mean,
right.
I've got them with 10 wins. So
okay.
I mean, I've got them, you know, squarely into the playoffs. I'm just thinking that the law of averages work out in a way that, you know, they'll some of those will work against them this year. And again, kind of the same thing with the Commanders. And I'm looking at that Giants defense and I'm going, I think they're going to surprise some people.
Yeah, I think they very well could. Again, you and I are both talking about something that you are right. Not a lot of analysts are focusing on, but this Giants roster, again, we all look at the addition by subtraction of letting Danny Dimes go, but the work that has been done around the margins, kind of tooling things up here and there, has been pretty stout. And that, I don't see the same thing myself, but I mean, it's the kind of thing where, I mean, you make a very good case for it. And again, if Philadelphia has any kind of regression whatsoever, that is going to leave it wide open, because I think with Washington, again, I think Terry McLaurin, you know, the one man, you know, team regression instrument here, and some of the other things that are happening, it may be difficult for them to repeat what they did a year ago. And spoiler alert, I don't think they're making the deep playoff run that they made a year ago. So we will see how all of this goes, but this is now, as we're recording this, one down and seven to go as far as our divisional previews for the year. Plus, we always do a playoff preview segment as well here at the end. So that has been our look at the NFC East. Thank you very much, Chris Galloway, and thank you, everybody, for checking out our 2025 NFC East preview on the FDH Lounge.